to say you're sorry. It's just, I'm leaving soon. Nothing is going to change that. If you can accept that, then... Peals of laughter came from the next room.
Then what? Sawyer asked. I can kiss you again?
That's not what I meant. There's a lot you don't know right now. She turned another corner, only to find herself in a dead end that looked like the mirrors in a department store dressing room. She backed out.
It's starting to make sense, Sawyer said. I even put the idea in your head, didn't I? Live a little, since you only have 6 months left here. Or was this your plan all along? Wait until a few months before you left, and then have one last hurrah?
She stopped in her tracks, stung. How had this gone so wrong, so fast? She was trying to do something good. You think I'm capable of that?
You're capable of leaving for 18 years without so much as a look back. Do you regret that at all?
His voice was moving away. She charged forward, determined to catch up to him. I wasn't the one who barreled ahead without looking back. And how do you know I didn't look back? Were you looking? No, you weren't. And you have no idea what my regrets are, Sawyer Alexander, so don't go there.
You're right. I don't. You never shared them with me. You wanted them all to yourself. But what you're saying is, the only way you can do this is if it's temporary. The only way you can let me in is knowing you get to leave me at a certain time. No strings. No dealing with our complicated past.
Where are you? She yelled in frustration.
I have news for you. You can't have temporary. As a matter of fact, you're nowhere near where I want you to be.
What does that mean?
Stay in Mullaby, Julia, and find out.
She heard the squeak of a door opening, then closing. Sawyer? Sawyer? It took a few minutes for her to make her way out. She went through the door and found herself in the rolling barrel. She ran through it, then through the air jets. But when she was finally outside again, the festival air textured like cotton candy, he was nowhere to be found. What she'd been trying to say was she didn't think it was a good idea to pursue a relationship in light of what she had to tell him. He might hate her after she told him. She didn't mean she wanted a fling with him, but he thought she meant that, and seemed very eager to turn the tables. And for what? Just to have his way? Temporary, whether she meant it or not, should have been a dream come true for him. Instead, he insinuated that she couldn't have him unless it was by his rules, unless she stayed. Did he honestly think that stringing her along would work? She thought he'd give her forever once, and look how well that turned out. She walked down the street toward the bandstand, huffing with indignation. This was good. The animosity was back. She didn't owe him anything. She could just walk away now. Nothing more needed to be said. Oh, God, if only she meant that. If only he hadn't kissed her. If only he hadn't told her. Julia had barely made it out of the amusement ride area when she heard, Julia! Julia! She turned and saw Beverly walk up to her with tiny clips of her high-heeled sandals. Her husband, Bud Dale, was walking beside her, looking like a pack mule as he carried all her bags. Beverly, Julia said in flat acknowledgement. Then she turned to Beverly's husband. I haven't seen you in a while, Bud. How are you?
I'm doing real well, Julia. You're real nice for asking.
There was something about the way he said that. It gave Julia pause. It was something her father would say, in that same good old boy kind of way. Beverly had left Julia's father, but then married a man just like him.
I have a big surprise for you, Beverly said.
What is it?
I don't have it with me now, she said,
which Julia found hard to believe, considering how many shopping bags Bud was holding for her.
But I'll come by to see you tomorrow around lunchtime, okay? I'm so excited about it.
Sure. Julia started to turn. See you later.
Why do you have to act this way, Julia?
Beverly asked, putting her hands on her hips. Why are you always so unhappy? It's not an attractive quality. Why don't you spruce yourself up a little? Take that awful streak out of your hair. Smile at men. Show a little skin. Beverly adjusted herself, pulling at the low V of her shirt. Oh, I know you don't like to show your scars, but once you're in bed with a man, it's not your arms he'll be looking at, if you catch my meaning. Thanks for your input. Goodbye, bud.
Good seeing you, Julia, he said as she walked away.
I always tried to be a mother to her, she heard Beverly say. You know, share my expertise. But I think there's something wrong with her that can't be fixed. Julia fought with herself, trying not to turn around and confront Beverly. Beverly had been no kind of mother to her. Julia kept walking, telling herself she wouldn't have to put up with this or with Sawyer for very long. Between the two of them, was it any wonder she was unhappy? She'd be fine as soon as she was back in Baltimore. Though she couldn't remember ever being incredibly happy there, she knew opening her bakery was going to change things, and at least she wouldn't be here. Emily walked around, slowly, surrounded by the hot mist from food vendors and the tinny horn music from the kiddie rides. She was trying not to look like she was looking for him. There was a chance Wynne didn't mean he wanted to spend any actual time with her at the festival when he'd asked if he would see her here. But there'd been no opportunity to find out for sure until now. She'd seen him several times that day, just passing glimpses before Julia pulled her away or his father distracted him. Emily was so relieved that Sawyer had come up to them when he did. It had given her the perfect excuse to go out on her own, although Julia didn't seem as happy with the idea of being alone with Sawyer as Emily thought she would be. Barely 5 minutes later, as she was heading to the information booth where she'd last seen Wynne as he was giving out directions to visitors, she felt a familiar warm hand on her arm. She turned around and smiled. Wynne had taken off his jacket and tie, and his sleeves were rolled up. He'd lost the boater hat, too. He managed to look Caribbean cool, his white button-down billowing every time the wind picked up. His eyes were intense and green as he looked down on her. "Hi," was her brilliant opening line. She couldn't help it. Being this close to him flustered her. "Hello," he said. "Have you noticed there's a conspiracy to keep us at least 20 feet away from each other at all times? Who would have thought being friends would be this hard?" He waved his hand forward, indicating they should walk. "I think that's the difference between us," he said, looking over his shoulder, distracted. "I knew how hard it would be going in." "So you get the badge of courage?" "I'm sorry," he said. "I didn't mean it like that. I'm glad to finally spend some time with you." Slightly mollified, she said, "I wish I could figure you out, Wynne." That made the side of his mouth lift into a smile. "If you only knew how refreshing it is to hear that." "Oh, come on. You mean everyone has figured you out but me?" He shrugged, making the fabric of his shirt wrinkle at his shoulders.
"Everyone in Mullaby, at least."
"Gee, as if I didn't feel like such an oddball already."
"See, that's exactly what I mean. You live in such a strange town, and yet you feel odd."
As they walked, their arms touched as they were jostled by the crowd. She liked the unintentional nature of it. Everything else about Wynne was so deliberate. "Well, I'm glad I could shake things up for you," she said, which made him laugh. They'd only been walking for a few minutes before he stopped and led her to a short queue.
"Let's go on this ride," he said, suddenly.
"Why this one?" she asked, following him. Being with him felt like a game sometimes, only she didn't know the rules, or who was winning.
"Because it's closest," he said, "and my dad is nearby."
Emily looked back, trying to find Morgan Coffee, but she couldn't see him. Wynne paid for their tickets, and they crossed the deck to the Ferris wheel. They took the next available seat, and the attendant placed the safety bar across them. Wynne put his arm over the back of the seat behind her and focused on the sky as the wheel slowly lifted them up. Emily, however, looked down at the crowd as it got smaller and smaller. She finally found his father. He was standing as still as stone, watching them with an expression made of ghosts and anger. "He'll leave soon," Wynne said, still looking up at the dusky sky. "He won't want anyone knowing that it bothers him that we're together."
"You and your dad don't get along, do you?"
"We're alike in many ways, but we don't see eye to eye. For example, he's very attached to doing things the way they've always been done. I don't agree."
The Ferris wheel came to a stop, 2 seats down from the top. "I've been thinking about you a lot this past week," she said, and it came out a lot more moony than she intended. He lowered his gaze from the sky and met her eyes. His smile was mischievous.
"Oh?"
"Not like that," she said, laughing. She stopped laughing when their seat swayed back and forth in the wind. She grabbed the safety bar in front of them. Of course, he didn't seem afraid to be up this high. "I just can't get my mind around something."
"What is it?"
"You wouldn't happen to be a werewolf, would you?"
"Excuse me?" he said.
She slowly loosened her hold on the bar and sat back. "There are only 2 reasons I can think of for why you don't come out at night. Night blindness or werewolf."
"And you decided to go with werewolf?"
"It was a toss-up." Wynne didn't answer for a few moments. He finally said,
"It's tradition. It's gone on for centuries."
"Why?"
"That's a good question. I guess because that's what traditions do."
"Is this another thing you and your father don't see eye to eye on?" The wheel started moving again.
"Yes, but going against this tradition is a big deal."
He turned to her.
"Of all the things I'm going to tell you, you need to understand that the most."
She suddenly felt excited. "What things are you going to tell me?"
"Strange and wondrous things," he said in a dramatic voice, like he was narrating a book.
"And why? Why are you doing this?"
"I told you before, we have history."
"Technically, we don't," she pointed out. "Your uncle and my mother had history."
"History is a loop. We're exactly where they stood 20 years ago. What's theirs is ours. What's ours will become theirs."
"You've thought about this a lot."
"Yes, I have."
The wheel made one more rotation before stopping again. This time, they were at the very top of the ride. Their seat creaked as it swung precariously back and forth. Emily grabbed the bar again. Wynne smiled at her.
"You are not afraid, are you?"
"Of course not.
Are you?"
He looked out over the horizon.
"I like seeing things from this perspective. I know what everything looks like from down there. I like seeing the possibilities of what's beyond that. What's beyond that loop I was talking about."
She didn't realize she was staring at him until he turned to stare back. The air around them suddenly changed. She was so close she could smell him, a hint of cologne, and she could see the perspiration collected in the indentation at the base of his throat. His eyes went to her lips. Something warm and desperate filled her body. She'd never felt anything like it. It felt like the entire universe would cease to exist if something didn't happen right then. But the moment passed, and his chest rose and fell as if taking a very deep breath of air. He moved his arm from the back of the seat. After another rotation, the wheel stopped and the attendant unhooked the safety bar. They both got off the ride without a word and walked off the deck.
"I'm sorry, but I've got to go," he said.
She was still feeling strange, sort of buzzed and prickly.
"Okay."
But he didn't leave.
"My dad is around the corner, waiting. he explained. I want to spare you whatever it is he might say.
Okay.
And still he didn't go. And it's going to get dark soon.
And you don't want to grow fur and fangs in front of me, she said. I get it.
His dark hair was curling in the humidity. He ran his hands through it. No, I don't think you do.
Then explain it to me. Tell me these strange and wondrous things.
That made him smile, like it was exactly what he wanted to hear, like he'd been planning this all along. I will. Next time. He turned to leave.
Wait, she called, and he stopped. I need to ask you something.
What is it?
She decided to come right out and say it. Do you blame me for what my mother did?
Of course not, he said immediately.
But your father does.
He hesitated. I can't speak for him.
Emily met Julia by the bandstand, as promised, and she could tell that both their moods had changed since they'd last been together. They bought Grandpa Vance a barbecue sandwich and a fried pickle, then headed home. Neither of them was particularly chatty. Julia said a distracted goodbye when they reached Grandpa Vance's house. Emily watched her walk away. Something was definitely on her mind. When Emily walked into the house, she knocked on the wall beside the accordion door to Vance's bedroom. Grandpa Vance? I'm home. When he opened the door, she caught her first glimpse of his bedroom, which had obviously once been the living room. The curtains were drawn over the windows to keep the heat out, but the light through the rust-colored material cast a glow of permanent sunset over the room. The room looked like it should smell stuffy, but there was actually a very faint scent of sweet perfume lingering in the air, as if a woman had left only moments before. There were rows upon rows of photographs on the shelves on the far wall, older photos of the same woman, a pretty woman with blonde hair and Emily's mother's smile. That must be her grandmother Lily. Where were the photos of her mother, she wondered. Did he have any? She held up the foil-wrapped food. I brought you some stuff from the festival.
Wonderful. I think I'll eat in the kitchen. Will you join me?
He led the way. As soon as they reached the kitchen, Vance went directly to the laundry room. Emily heard the dryer door open, then close. Then Vance walked back out.
So, how did you like our little barbecue shindig?
Emily smiled. It wasn't little at all.
What did you and Julia do?
He went to the breakfast nook and sat, absently rubbing his knees as if they ached.
Wandered around, ate too much. She bought me this T-shirt.
Emily walked over to him and placed the food on the table, then sat opposite him. She brought the T-shirt out of the small bag she'd been carrying.
Ha! That's a good one,
Vance said as he read what was on the shirt.
Did you see any kids your age?
Emily hesitated before she said, Just win coffee.
Well, it is their festival, he said
as he unwrapped his food and began to eat.
You need to meet some other people your age. As I recall, my friend Lawrence Johnson has a grandson, in middle school, I think.
Confused, Emily said, Do you think he'd want me to babysit?
Yes, I guess that is a little young for you, Vance said. It's only July. School doesn't start until next month, and you're going to get bored.
He suddenly looked worried.
That friend of your mother's, Mary, said she would take care of getting you registered and your class credits transferred. Do you think I should check the school, just in case?
Emily had been so focused on what was going on here, she hadn't given Mary much thought lately. That startled her.
Mary probably handled everything. She's very detail-oriented, just like Mom.
Emily looked down to the T-shirt in her lap.
Mom helped found the school I went to. Did you know that?
He nodded.
Mary and I had a long talk. Your mother had a remarkable life. Mary told me a lot about you, too. She said you were involved in a lot of activities.
Emily shrugged.
Her old life felt so bound and heavy now. They were school requirements.
I bet there are a lot of activities you can get involved in here. Lots of stuff you can do at night.
She knew what he was doing, being about as subtle as an 8-foot-tall man. He didn't want her associating with Wynne. She understood why. At the same time, she wondered if she could change this, if the reason she came here, in the whole scheme of things, was to make this right. Like her mother said, don't wait for the world to change. She'd been thinking a lot lately about clues her mother might have given her over the years, either on purpose or unconsciously, about her time here, about lessons she'd learned. Who she'd become, Emily was beginning to understand, was her penance. She'd hurt people when she was young. She'd saved them when she got older. But for all the good she'd done, she'd never thought it was enough. Her mother had never been satisfied. After Grandpa Vance ate, he got up and threw the food wrappers away. Then he went back to the laundry room to check the dryer. She couldn't stand it any longer. She had to know. When he came back out, she slid out of her seat in the breakfast nook and asked, "Why do you do that? Check the dryer so often?" He laughed and gave her a sly look.
"I was wondering when you'd ask," he said.
He walked to the refrigerator and took out 2 green bottles of 7-Up. He handed one to Emily.
"I was a little uptight when Lily and I first married. I'd lived alone for quite a while before she moved in. Without realizing I was doing it, I would follow her around when she would do housework to make sure it was done the way I'd always done it. The thing that bothered Lily the most was my checking the dryer after her to see if she'd left any clothes behind."
He shook his head at the memory.
"Because I'm so tall, I can't see that low into the dryer, so I just reach down and feel. One day, after she'd walked out with a basket of laundry, I went in and stuck my hand in the dryer, and felt something cold and slimy. She'd set a frog from the backyard in the dryer for me to find. I jerked my hand out so fast that I fell down. Then out jumps the frog. I watched him hop from the room, past Lily's shoes. She was standing in the doorway, laughing. Well, I learned my lesson. Over the years, she'd tell me to go check the dryer as a joke, and I'd always find a small gift from her."
He twisted the top off his bottle and took a drink.
"After she died, I just kept checking. I don't know why. It's not like I ever find anything. But it makes me think of her. And when I get worried or anxious about something, I go check, just in case she wants to tell me something."
"I think that's sweet, Grandpa Vance," Emily said. "I wish I'd known her."
"I do, too. She would have liked you."
They said goodnight at the staircase, and Vance went back into his room. Emily made it halfway up the staircase before she stopped. She hesitated, then walked back down and went to the laundry room. She studied the dryer for a moment, even going so far as to lean over it to see what was behind it. Before she knew what she was doing, her hand went to the handle, and she quickly opened the door, jumping back as if something inside might fly out at her. She cautiously peered in. Nothing was there. She almost laughed at herself as she walked out. What had possessed her to do that? What sign was she looking for? Hours later, Emily slowly opened her eyes, not sure what had awakened her. She took a deep breath. When she exhaled, in her sleep-addled mind, the air came out as blue as smoke. She stared at the ceiling, and it gradually came to her. Something was wrong. The room was normally brighter than this. When she'd gone to sleep, light from the moon was shining in through the open balcony doors, sending rays as pale as cream into the room. She turned her head on the pillow to see that the balcony doors she'd left open were now closed, and the curtains had been drawn over them. Her heart suddenly gave a single hard thud of surprise, and her scalp tightened, which felt like every hair was on end. Someone had been in her room. She reached under her pillow and turned off her MP3 player. Then she slowly sat up on her elbows. She knew it was him. His presence felt different, different from anyone she'd ever known. She could feel the lingering warmth of him still in the air. She pulled the earbuds out of her ears and got up and went quickly to the light switch. When she flicked it on, the chandelier bathed the room in cobwebby light, but no one was there. From across the room, she saw a piece of paper peeking out from the curtains. The twin doors had been shut with a note tucked between them. She hurried over and pulled the note out. "I'm sorry I had to leave the festival. I didn't want to. Will you spend the day with me? Meet me on the boardwalk at Piney Woods Lake this morning. Wynne." Emily immediately swung open the doors and stepped out on the balcony, looking around. "Wynne?" Nothing. The only sounds were the katydids and the papery rustling of leaves in the wind. Her heart was still thumping, heavy and fast, but not so much from fear now as an incredible sense of anticipation. It had been a long time since she'd felt anything like this. It had been months since she'd looked forward to anything—food, birthdays, weekends. He made her remember how it felt. The edge of her nightgown was fluttering against her legs, and the air around her was charged with energy. She didn't want to move. She didn't want to let go of this feeling. A few minutes later, she heard an engine turn over. The lights of Julia's truck, parked at the curb in front of her house, suddenly sprang to life. Emily watched the truck pull away and drive down the street. She guessed she wasn't the only one who wasn't going to sleep that night. Chapter 12. When Sawyer opened the door to his townhouse, he was irritated, as anyone would be if they were forced out of bed at dark 30 by the incessant ringing of a doorbell. The neighborhood had better be on fire. The door flew open and hit the wall as he flicked on the porch light. Julia took her hand away from the doorbell, and the grating shriek inside his house immediately stopped. He blinked a few times.
"Julia?"
he asked, just to be sure. "I need to talk to you."
"Now?"
He wasn't at his best. She rolled her eyes. "Yes, now." He took a good long look at her. She hadn't changed clothes. She was wearing the same faded jeans and embroidered white peasant blouse she'd been wearing at the festival. He should have stayed there with her, but he'd been angry. She thought he only wanted a piece of her, that he would accept a fling. While he'd certainly had his share of flings, most of which he'd greatly enjoyed, he wanted to be nobler than that with Julia. And she wouldn't let him.
"Are you drunk?"
he asked.
"No, I am not drunk. I'm mad." "Oh, good, because for a moment there I thought it was going to be something unusual."
He stepped back.
"Come in."
It was an automatic gesture. He didn't think anything of it until she walked past him into his darkened living room. That's when it hit him. She was in his house, exactly where he wanted her to be, and he had no idea what to do next. The only light came from his kitchen, where he kept the hood light over his oven on at night. She looked around, nodding slightly to herself, as if his space was exactly what she expected it to be, like there was a fine, crisp scent of privilege here that she didn't like.
"Is this about the big thing you wanted to tell me?"
he asked, slightly afraid that it was. One big thing left to tell him, and then she wouldn't want anything more to do with him? She turned to face him, her brows lowered.
"What?" "Last week, you gave me a cake, told me you started baking because of me, then said there was some big thing you were going to tell me later. Is this later?"
"No, this has nothing to do with that. Why would I be mad about that?" He sighed.
"I don't know, Julia. When it comes to you, it's all guesswork."
She began to pace. "I was fine here until you went all humble on me. And you almost had me, too. I almost trusted you." She made a scoffing sound. "And you accuse me of being conniving."
"What are you talking about?"
"I'm talking about what you said today." He rubbed the side of his face. The blonde stubble of his beard made a scratchy sound.
"Refresh my memory."
You said that I'm only letting you in because I'm planning to leave, and then you walked away from me.
Ah, he let his hand drop. That.
I wasn't saying that at all, which I would have told you if you'd stuck around, but it doesn't matter that it wasn't what I meant, because so what?
He was beginning to think it wasn't his sleepy mind after all. She really was making no sense.
Excuse me?
So what if I was only letting you in because I'm planning to leave? What would that matter to you? You've been trying to get into my pants ever since I came back, and you were going to let something like my leaving get in your way? It didn't get in your way last time.
His head suddenly felt hot. She'd struck a nerve.
For the record, you know as well as I do that I could get into your pants at any time.
He took a step toward her, so close his chest grazed her breasts.
Because I know exactly how to do that.
So do it now, she said, obviously trying to be brave, but her voice faltered a little.
I want in here, too.
He put his finger to her temple. You are there.
What about here?
He put his hand on her chest, over her heart. Her heart was racing. Was it anger? Fear? Lust? She suddenly took a step back. You're not going to do that to me again.
What?
Weasel your way into my heart. Charm me and make me think it's for real, that it's forever. It took years to get over it last time. You are not going to insinuate forever to me again. You're not going to promise me anything, and I'm not promising you. So that stay because you're nowhere near where I want you to be crap isn't going to work. Do you know how much easier it would have been if you had just promised me one night? That night? Do you realize how much I hated you for making me think you loved me?
Julia.
No. Promise me one night, she said. Don't promise to love me. Don't ask me to stay. To hell with nobility. He reached for her and kissed her. It was all at once passionate, as if there was too much in him to contain. He was immediately swept up in it. It took no effort. The difference between swimming on your own and being washed away in a flood. His hands went to the hem of her shirt and slowly pushed it up. When his hands brushed over her bare breasts, her back arched. He broke their kiss. Her fingers automatically tightened in his hair, as if wanting him back.
Jesus, you came here without a bra on, he said.
He backed her against the wall, and soon her shirt was over her head. She started moving restlessly against him. It made him groan. He clamped a hand onto her hip and surged against her. She met his rhythm flawlessly. He reached down and unbuttoned her jeans, and she tried to help him push them down while not breaking their kiss, but their lips kept separating. Finally, he simply used his foot to slide them the rest of the way down, and she stepped out of them.
You want one night? I'll give it to you, he said, as he picked her up and carried her to the couch. But it's going to be one hell of a night.
He stood over her, staring down at her so hungrily that she made an attempt to cover herself. His hands went to the waistband of his pajama bottoms and pushed them down, not taking his eyes off of her. He put one knee on the couch beside her. She swallowed and put her hand up to his bare chest.
Wait, Sawyer.
He hung his head, sucking in breaths.
What are you doing to me, Julia?
I meant wait, because I have to get the condoms out of my jeans pocket. He lifted his head, surprised.
I wasn't lying. I can't have kids.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
He got up anyway, completely unself-conscious, and went to her jeans. He dug out the condoms and made quick work of putting one on.
No more waiting, he said, as he covered her body with his.
No more waiting. It had never been like this with anyone else. They held on to each other as if the force of their bodies coming together could make everything that had ever separated them disappear. And it did, for a short period of time. Time he wished he could stop, so he could live inside it for the rest of his life. Afterward, breath gone, clinging to each other so hard they would leave marks, Sawyer, whose head was buried in Julia's neck, managed to say,
"Contrary to my lamentable lack of restraint just now,
I have actually learned a few things since I was 16.
She gave a sudden laugh.
And as soon as I have the strength to get up, I'm taking you to my bedroom and showing you.
It was morning, but still dark in his bedroom when she woke up. Sawyer watched as she blinked a few times and turned her head on the pillow to find him staring at her. Her hair was rumpled, the pink streak curling around her ear. She took a deep, defeated breath. I thought I had everything figured out.
Do you think promising you another night might clear things up?
She smiled, but didn't answer. He brushed one finger lightly against her forearm. He saw the moment she realized he was following the lines of her scars. She immediately pulled her arm away. He pulled it back.
Why did you do this to yourself?
He asked. She watched him as he watched his finger trace the lines. It was my way of dealing with the depression and isolation I felt. I didn't know how to cope, and all my anger was turned inward, so this is what I did.
Don't think I'm naturally this enlightened. That's years of therapy speaking.
He met her eyes. Do you ever think of doing it again?
No. In case you hadn't noticed, I'm very good at expressing my anger these days.
She shifted slightly, then winced a little.
Are you okay?
She cleared her throat.
It's been a while.
Was it wrong that that made him happy?
He didn't care.
It did. He'd spent a lot of time wondering about what she was doing in Baltimore, thinking about who she was with. He knew so little about that part of her life.
Why didn't you come back to Mullaby, Julia?
I didn't think there was anything left for me. She rolled her head back on the pillow and stared at the ceiling.
Didn't you ever get homesick?
I'm homesick all the time, she said, still not looking at him. I just don't know where home is. There's this promise of happiness out there. I know it. I even feel it sometimes. But it's like chasing the moon. Just when I think I have it, it disappears into the horizon. I grieve and try to move on, but then the damn thing comes back the next night, giving me hope of catching it all over again. He'd never heard her so raw and honest. Julia, who always kept her feelings to herself.
Is that the big thing you were going to tell me?
No.
He groaned. You're killing me. Is it something good?
Yes. He put his hand on her thigh and started moving his way up.
Better than last night?
There's no comparison. She put her hand on his, stopping the movement. What time is it? He lifted himself on his elbow and looked over to the clock on the nightstand.
A little after 9.
She hesitated.
In the morning? Yes.
She gasped and jumped out of the bed. She went to the heavy curtains and threw them open. Morning light immediately cut into the dark room. When the spots left his vision, he found himself staring at her naked body, silhouetted in the window. He was riveted. She made his stomach tight, his head light.
I can't believe it's morning. Why didn't you tell me? What kind of curtains are these?
She grabbed the offending material and looked at it closely. I thought it was night.
They're insulated light blockers. I'd be blinded every morning if I didn't have them.
He sat up against his pillows and put his hands behind his head.
I really enjoy this side of you, but I think you're giving my neighbors the best view. Why don't you turn around?
She quickly stepped away from the window and covered herself with one of the curtain panels. I can't believe I just flashed your neighbors on a Sunday morning.
I know I saw the face of God.
I've got to go, she said, eyeing the door.
No.
I have to make the day's cakes at the restaurant. I'm so late. I'm usually there and gone by now. Where are my clothes? She looked around, then said, oh, downstairs. And she darted, naked, from his room. He smiled and got up. He took his robe from the back of his door and put it on as he walked down the stairs after her. She was quick. She already had on her jeans and her shoes and was pulling her shirt over her head. By the time her head poked through the collar, he was there, backing her against the wall by the door.
We're back where we started. I think this is a sign that we need to do it again.
If you let me go, I'll bake you a cake.
Vixen.
Suddenly there was a knock at the door, directly to the right, which startled Julia so much she let out a small scream. Sawyer winced and rubbed his ear. Who is that? She whispered.
I don't know.
Don't answer it. Maybe they'll go away.
And call the police because there was a woman screaming in here. What's the problem? You don't want people to know we've been together?
He turned and went to the door before she could answer, because he was afraid of what that answer might be. Even after last night, she was still water in his hands. He didn't know how to hold on. Sawyer opened the door. When he saw who was standing there, he thought, oh, damn. This wasn't going to help things at all.
Hi, Sawyer, Holly said as she walked in. Was that you, screaming like a girl?
Holly stopped when she saw Julia. There was an awkward moment when the three of them, cramped in the small space by the door, didn't say anything, just stared at one another.
Holly, Sawyer finally said, you remember Julia Winterson?
Of course, Holly said, giving Sawyer a pointed look before turning to Julia and smiling. It's nice to see you, Julia.
You too. I'm sorry to run, but I'm late.
And in seconds, she was gone, again. Sawyer closed the door and turned to his ex-wife.
I forgot you were coming by.
Holly kissed him on the cheek and walked through his living room to his kitchen and began to make coffee. He followed her, remembering the feeling he had when he first asked Holly to be his girlfriend in sixth grade, that intense, I'll finally get to hold her hand feeling. She was his best friend all through school. He valued her. He respected her. But he didn't know if he was ever in love with her. That night with Julia on the football field should have told him that, but he'd been too afraid to give up on the future he'd planned. He was the one who had ended the marriage. Holly would have stayed once they'd found out he couldn't have kids. In fact, she'd become almost manically determined to stick it out. She'd brought home information on adoption and tried to be enthusiastic. Kids were an integral part of their plan, but he realized she wanted them so much because what they had together wasn't enough. It never had been.
You finally did it, Holly said when he walked into the kitchen. She was scooping coffee grounds out of the can. I can't believe it.
Sawyer pulled out a stool and sat at the counter.
What are you talking about?
Don't play dumb with me. She looked over her shoulder with a grin. She looked good, happy. Her hair was pulled back into a ponytail, revealing that her face was fuller, rounding out her normally sharp cheekbones. She'd put on weight.
I know you too well. You've had a thing for her since we were kids, and you finally got her.
Sawyer sighed.
I'm not so sure about that.
Holly's smile disappeared. Oh, hell. I didn't...
No, it's not your fault. You look fantastic, by the way.
Are you really okay with this? With me getting married again? With this? She put her hand to her stomach.
I'm happy for you, Holly. I truly am.
She snorted and turned back to the coffee.
I think you're only saying that because you got some last night.
Sawyer slid off the stool and walked to his office.
I'll get the papers for you to sign.
Liquid morning light was rippling through the open balcony doors when Emily woke up. She had no idea what time it was, but she felt she'd only been asleep for minutes. The note. She turned quickly to the bedside table. The note was still there, where she'd left it. She picked it up and stared at it. She was tempted to even put it to her nose. Was she going to do it? Was she going to meet him? Wynn said he didn't blame her for what her mother had done, but how could she know for sure? What were his motives? She wouldn't know until this had played itself out. Her mother was the bravest person she had ever known, yet even she hadn't been able to face down her past. So Emily would. She would do something her mother couldn't do. In order to find her place here, she had to set herself apart from who her mother had been, but she also had to try to make it right. How exactly she was going to do that, she didn't know. There was a nagging part of her that suspected Wynn might know, that his interest in her wasn't as simple as he wanted it to seem. But then, her interest in him was pretty complicated, too. She thought about the history loop he'd talked about. Here she was in the same place her mother had been, at about the same age, and involved with the coffees in a way no one approved of, just like last time. There had to be a reason for it. She got up, the note still in her hand, and walked to her dresser for shorts and a tank top. She was getting used to averting her eyes to avoid looking at the frenzied butterfly wallpaper, getting used to the soft, fluttering sound it occasionally gave off. Getting used to it meant she was fitting in, according to Julia. Either that, or she was officially going crazy. When she reached the dresser, though, she suddenly realized there wasn't any sound that morning. She looked up and took a surprised step back. The butterfly wallpaper was now gone. It had been replaced by a moody, breathless wallpaper of silver, sprinkled with tiny white dots that looked like stars. It made her feel an odd sense of anticipation, like last night. Grandpa Vance couldn't have come in last night and done this. Did it really change on its own? It was beautiful, this wallpaper. It made the room look like living in a cloud. She put her hand on the wall by her dresser. It was soft, like velvet. How could her mother not have told her a room like this existed? She'd never mentioned it, not even in a bedtime story. She dressed quickly, distracted, and went downstairs. Thankfully, Grandpa Vance had already left for breakfast, so she wrote him a note telling him she'd be at the lake. She didn't mention who she was meeting there. Once on the sidewalk, she was about to get in her car when she heard her name being called in the morning quiet. Already jittery, she jumped in surprise and dropped her car keys. She turned quickly to see Stella walking toward her from next door. She looked strangely overdressed for that time of morning, in a strapless red dress and heels. Her wide face had fading blotches of makeup on it, and her exotic eyes were tired. She looked like she'd had a bad night. Or maybe a very good one. Emily couldn't decide which. "Have you seen Julia?" Stella asked as Emily knelt to pick up her keys. "I just went by Jay's barbecue, and she wasn't there." Emily stood. "I haven't seen her since yesterday, but I did hear her leave in her truck around 1 o'clock this morning." Stella looked confused. "I wonder where she went." Emily shrugged. She tried to act casual, like she wasn't doing anything wrong, which, of course, she wasn't. What was the matter with her? Why was she so nervous? "Julia almost never uses her truck, and she never goes out that late. I'm worried about her." Stella started picking at her red fingernail polish. She shifted her weight to one hip and asked, "Do you think she's been acting weird lately?"
"Only around Sawyer."
"Hmm. Something's on her mind.
If I get enough wine in her, I can usually get her to talk. But I think she's on to me about that now."
Emily looked over her shoulder anxiously, half expecting to see Grandpa Vance coming home. "She hasn't said anything to me."
"Well, if you see her, tell her I'm looking for her."
Stella nodded to the Oldsmobile at the curb.
"Where are you going at this time of morning?"
"To the lake. What about you?"
"Oh, I'm just getting in," Stella said, then paused. "Crap. I can't believe I said that to you. Erase that. I'm not setting a very good example. Crap. Just do as I say, not as I do."
That made Emily laugh as she got in her car. Stella walked back to her house, taking off her heels and shaking her head to herself. There was so little traffic at that time of morning that Emily arrived at Piney Woods Lake in record time. The parking lot was nearly empty. She parked and turned off the ignition, then sat in silence while the engine ticked as it cooled. She knew she was too early, but she'd wanted to leave before Grandpa Vance got home. She didn't want to lie to his face. She didn't know if he would understand why she was doing this. Finally, she got out of the car. The murky morning air was so heavy that it beaded on her skin as she walked to the boardwalk and sat on one of the benches overlooking the lake. There were very few people there. She propped her feet on the railing while watching the fog roll off the water. Some of the lake houses had their lights on, but not many. She heard footsteps approach on the boardwalk behind her. Then Wynne appeared by the bench. She stared up at him, not knowing what to say. She had no idea he would be here this early, too. He waited a moment, then he sat beside her and put his feet on the railing beside hers. He stared intently at the water, as if he would miss something important if he looked away. He had a strong, angular profile, austere, proud, full of secrets. She wanted in. She wanted to know those secrets. Was this how her mother felt? She wondered if there was a curse, one that impossibly attracted the women of her family to the men of his. Yet here she was, still doing this. "Come to my family's lake house and have breakfast with me," he finally said. "How long have you been waiting?"
"A while. I didn't want to miss you."
He took a deep breath, then stood.
"I'm glad you came."
He held out his hand to her. It didn't take long for her to accept it. Chapter 13. They walked down the empty beach, then Wynne led Emily up the steps to the large deck of his family's lake house. He gestured for her to sit in one of the Adirondack chairs. She did, pulling her legs up and wrapping her arms around them. She relaxed this stance only when Penny, the housekeeper, came out and served them frittatas. Penny was 63 years old, widowed, and extremely set in her ways, but she had a soft spot for Wynne, and Wynne adored her. When he was a little boy, he used to think of Penny and the lake house as a single entity. He'd thought she sat alertly on a stool in the kitchen all day and night, waiting for his family to visit so she could cook for them. The first time he'd seen her outside the context of the lake house, on one of her days off, he'd been downtown with his mother. He'd seen Penny walk down the street, and he'd thought she'd escaped, so he'd yelled at his mom to catch her and bring her back. He'd been absolutely hysterical. His limited understanding at the time had been that, because of who he was, he couldn't leave Mullaby, but other people could. They could leave and never come back, and that had petrified him. He and Emily ate breakfast in a silence that wasn't entirely comfortable. He made her nervous, and she made him feel off balance. It felt like too much, like he was taking more than he should, but he couldn't seem to help it. He'd spent his life accepting what his father told him he could never change and forcing himself not to covet the freedom other people had. Things had to change.